John Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
And here we are on a Friday. Mr. Mayor, welcome aboard and good morning as always.
December has arrived.
It has.
Officially declaring.
Well, you lit the tree the other day.
Yes, that was fun. Three guys with names that you wouldn't think would normally be lighting a Christmas tree. I was in Williamsburg.
You're very ecumenical.
I was in Williamsburg with an Orthodox community the other day, and I described that. They all had a big laugh out of it.
I'm sure.
But on the other hand, they'll always have an Irish cop, a precinct commander, at their dinners as well. So, in New York.
One big happy family, or at least one family. Happy all the time is another question.
You know, a lot more so than any place else.
Absolutely. You have brought a friend along with you. We got a guest in the studio.
All right. This is the guy that everybody should hate. He collects the money.
Nice intro.
Absolutely.
David Frankel, Finance Commissioner for New York City. David, welcome. Good morning.
Morning. Thank you.
Nice to meet you for the very first time. You keep the finances, and you want to collect the money that is owed the city.
That's right. There's about $5 billion or so in money that's owed to the city, of which we think about $2 billion or so is actually collectible. Some of it's 20 years old. Some of it is for businesses and people that are in bankruptcy. But we're going to go and find all the money that we possibly can.
The boss said, go get some money. I need it to pay the bills.
Right. The tax collector or the debt collector throughout history has sort of been viewed as this evil Sheriff of Nottingham type guy. And quite frankly, I think exactly the opposite is true. People always focus on, the poor people who owe us money who we're going after, rather than focusing on the 95% or 98% of New Yorkers who actually pay what they owe.
And which annoys it should annoy the 95% that pay.
It does. The trouble is the 2 or 3% is very vocal, and some elected officials rush to the steps to defend them. And the vast majority of the people pay their bills and get good services and are happy living here. But if you read some of the stories, you'd never believe that. But that's, in fact, the case.
All right. Well, is there one area that is most delinquent?
Well, I think there are a bunch of areas that are delinquent. One, of course, is parking tickets, which has had a bunch of press in the last week or two. We have about $440 million of outstanding parking tickets that are in judgment already that we are going to try to collect. We're going to do that through a whole bunch of different techniques. I will tell you that the bottom line is you should find us before we find you.
It'll be cheaper.
It'll be less intrusive. And by the way, we have no interest in being intrusive. We just want your money, and we want the money that you owe. So we don't really want to tow your car. We want you to pay your fines. But literally just last month, we sent 1.4 million summonses worth $209 million for 470,000 car owners to in-state collection agency. We sent another 900,000 or so summonses representing cars in 10 or 12 different states to an outside collection agency. We are going to tow your car if we find it. We are going to garnish your salary if we know where you work.
That's something you don't want to do. You do not want to go to the tow pound, because that really is not fun.
No, you really don't want to do that. And but right now, for instance, we have we can't tow your car unless you have $350 worth of outstanding tickets. We have people who know the game so well that they constantly pay down their tickets to just below the $350 level. Well, we need other ways of finding those people also. So we will seize your assets. We will garnish your salary. We will suspend your registration. We will do anything we can, and it's really to protect those people who pay.
What's happening with the water bills? Because I know that there's been a lot of delinquency over the years with that.
We worked with the city council. We can put a lien on your house, and I think it's a lot better now.
Much better.
Yeah. Yeah, but once again, the water bills. Handful of people don't pay. Everybody else does. If you're in the everybody else, which most people by definition are, you should be screaming, hey, come on, let's go after those. That's just not fair.
Right. And the terrific collection efforts that the Department of Environmental Protection has done has made the water bills for those people who do pay less than they would have been, significantly
less.
Well,
that is an important factor, that the deadbeats are going to make it cost more for the rest of us.
You know, the trouble is, John, it's always a small group that's organized and that gets the headlines, and some of the elected officials rush to defend them. The general public is basically happy, so they go about their business and they gripe a little bit, but they don't rush to the steps of City Hall. They don't call and write letters. And so, unfortunately, it's whoever screams the loudest, and that's true more so today, I think, than ever before. I gave a speech the other day, and I talked about, you know, the bloggers and the television shows and the radio shows. It's the people that call in and yell and scream that everybody, you think everybody's there, and that's not true. It's a very small percentage of the people, generally.
Is it intellectually honest to say that if indeed these numbers these dollars were collected, that people might not have to lose their jobs in this city, or is that a little too much?
No. I mean, anything you do makes this if you collect from everybody, then the taxes will be lower on the vast bulk of the people, which makes it more attractive to live here and have a business here. Yeah, I mean, you can't point to one little thing, but in the aggregate, you couldn't be more right.
All right. How about on taxes, per se, general taxes? Is the collection pretty good along those lines, or is there,
again,
the same
thing? First of all, depending on what taxes you're talking about, with property taxes, we tell you what you owe us, and we try to get your, and most people pay, the vast majority of people pay their property tax. We have very little delinquency. But with business taxes and income taxes, you're telling us what you owe us, and we then audit that, and you know, sometimes we find people haven't reported what they should, and I'm sure there are a lot of businesses who don't report anything at all, and we're going to try to find that. The mayor has given us money to hire an additional 90 new auditors this year and last year. He's given us some more money to hire.
And they'll bring in an awful lot more than they cost.
Sure, right,
that's
exactly
the kind of hires you do want to make when times are tough and we're cutting back every place.
Each auditor
they
costs
pay for
us,
themselves over.
Each auditor costs us about $60,000 or $70,000, and we estimate that they bring in between $500,000 and $750,000 a year. Those are exactly
that's
the kind
easy
of
math.
That's a good return.
That's
right.
Easy math, exactly. So, all right. Well, good luck to you. I guess that there's nothing else you can do other than knock on doors and warn, right?
Yeah, and I should say, if you are in real financial extremis and you've had financial setbacks, you come in and work with us. We'll put you into payment plans. We'll try to help you pay. But if you try to avoid us, we're going to come and find you as best we possibly can.
There you go. You've heard it right here from David Frankel. David, thank you very much. Good to meet you
this morning.
Mr. Mayor, hang on. Let me take a break. Speaking of dollars and cents, I'll raise a few for the company here. 15 minutes after 8 o'clock, back with Michael Bloomberg in just a moment.
John Gambling and Mayor Mike, News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, a speech on Wednesday that caught everybody's attention, talking about the things that you've mentioned here over the years and months about the federal government and the way it works and doesn't work.
Well, what this speech was about was jobs. I mean, our responsibility is to do everything we can as a city government to help people get jobs and get good jobs and better jobs, whatever it is, in New York City. Some of the things we can do, we have our Workforce One centers. We placed 30,000 people this year. Job creation in New York City, I think we've created something like 55,000 jobs this year, which is way over our percentage of the population. But some of the things we need federal help for. We need the administration when they're out trying to sell our products. You know, the prime minister, presidents, whatever, of the Western European countries, they're out selling Airbus airplanes every time they go visit someplace. Our president should and Congress, they should be out there selling Boeing airplanes. That's what that creates a lot of jobs in this country. Selling American agricultural products, selling American IT products. We need immigration reform because here in New York City, we need more immigrants to start more businesses. So it was a bunch of things which I, the reason that I was talking about it is to the extent that they impact New York City on New York City things that we're responsible for. You could have given a speech on immigration, could have given a speech on education. We need a lot of help from Washington and from our state government. We're very dependent, as you know, on our state government and to some extent in Washington. Arne Duncan, Secretary of Education, was here yesterday. So those are the kinds of things that make some sense. The Zadroga bill. I've been down to Washington a number of times. You know, Schumer and Gillibrand have worked very hard on this. Maloney and a whole bunch of Pete King and a whole bunch of people on the House side, they got it done. The Senate is where it's been unable to get done. And I thought it was really depressing yesterday. The Senate refused to pass the Zadroga bill, and the House refused to pass the compromise bill that the president negotiated with the Republicans. There's some good things, some bad things, but that's what democracy is all about. It was not a good day yesterday for the country, I think. I think that we've got to come back next week.
And you talked about the process that's been involved in this and every day.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes on and on. Listen, I think that this last election was not a pro-Republican or an anti-Democrat election. It was, I don't like what's going on, so who's ever in power, throw them out. And since it's a binary thing, you get Republican or Democrat, Democrat or Republican. The House went from the Democrat side to the Republican side, and the Senate almost went there. And 2 years from now, both these parties have got to understand. The Republicans got thrown out in 06. The Democrats got thrown out in 2010. And
does
it's not because
it
they like the
for a third party.
No, this is just plain and simple. These are the two major parties. The public is not happy, and they say, you know, let's get somebody new. And you really just have there are a handful of races around the country where they had an independent candidate. There's a candidate for the state senate for federal government, U.S. Senate, who has been the senator up in Alaska. Her party, the Republican Party, didn't nominate her. She ran as a write-in candidate. I mean, it looks like she's won, but she's still in the courts, and so who knows? There are a handful of independents, but most of it is since the parties make sure that all of their members vote as a block. It's fundamentally Republican versus Democrat, and the public just doesn't have a third choice, and so they change when they're not happy.
Do you think that they might vote for that third choice if it were there? Now, I know we've had a few examples of that, but
we're talking about in the House and the Senate. You know, you've got 360, whatever it is,
Congress people,
and 100 senators, and in most of those races, it's going to be one or the other. You're not going to have a lot. You can always say, you know, there's an independent governor of Rhode Island. Who was elected. I mean, you know, there's some independence around. But fundamentally, this country is built around a two-party system, particularly in Congress.
In the tax debate that is going on this week on the extension of the rates that exist right now, should they stay the same or should they?
Well, we need money. We have enormous deficits. Nobody should think that we shouldn't find more ways to raise money, and certainly the federal government's got to control their expenses just like our state has to and our city has to, and that's a whole, we can have a whole other talk about that. But
I want to.
Fundamentally, I've said I would continue the tax cuts for a limited period of time, 2 years, if that's what the president agreed with Republicans, that's fine, simply because I don't think at this point where the economy's so fragile, and we're trying to create jobs, we could run the risk of driving people. They're not going to leave the country. Companies can leave the country. You look at Ireland; they're fighting so hard with their bailout thing to keep their low tax rate because a lot of businesses are in Ireland solely. Because
moved there in the 90s,
low taxes in a country, in all fairness, that's English speaking and very well educated and an awful lot of nice people. It's a great place to do business, but they believe, that's why they're fighting so hard, that there are other alternatives for businesses with some of the same characteristics, except they have a low tax rate. So businesses will go from one country to another based on tax rate. People aren't going to leave their country generally. They go from one state to another. And when federal taxes are higher, state taxes become more important. You just have less money. And so you can't just sit there and say, well, they're not going to leave. They will leave. The businesses will go elsewhere with their jobs, and the people that pay the taxes can move to other states. And we've got to make sure that they get enough value here in New York, for example, our responsibility, to be willing to pay what's our, no argument about it. Our taxes are a lot higher than Florida's. Florida doesn't have an income tax, doesn't have an estate tax. So, you know, why doesn't everybody move to Florida? The answer is a lot of people find what New York offers to be worth the money. And so we've got to keep the money as low as possible and the worth as great as possible, unless we keep working on it.
All right, let's talk about that in the news this morning, the story about the FDNY charging for dealing with car accidents.
Yeah, I mean, incidentally, you know, people look at these things and say, oh, my God, I never thought about that. These things are done in lots of other jurisdictions.
I mean, don't we already pay for that? Isn't the fee just another
ways to raise money?
Correct.
Yes. Yes, what do you think all this stuff is about?
But shouldn't my argument, the theoretical argument is, shouldn't we be cutting the expenses so that we don't have to take any more money from the people?
We should be cutting our expenses, but I would allege that if you have an accident and you need medical help, you don't want us to cut the ambulance. We should send the fire truck. So we're going to send the stuff, provide the services anyways. Your issue is, well, can you do it more efficiently? Or you want to cut the programs that don't apply to you?
I want to whatever that is. And, of course, that's where the rubber meets the road.
Right.
I mean, that's the question.
Thank you very much. I mean, you know, cut the other guy's program, tax the other guy. That's like somebody said, you know, anger is not a good management strategy.
But I view the FDNY charges here and the ambulance charges to the hospitals that are being proposed as really just a backdoor tax.
Yes. You can tax, fee, whatever you want to call it. All money is fungible. These are ways. The fire department has to do more with less. They can, and our firefighters want to get paid. Okay, and since most of the fire department's expense, as is all agencies, is salary and pensions. Pension costs are going to be just getting worse and worse and worse. Would you like them to close firehouses? Or would you like them to have less technology in case something goes wrong? They'll say, oh, the heck with it? No, I don't think so. So they've got to raise the money. So where are they going to raise the money to?
But then what you're saying is that there is no hope for cutting for being efficient.
No, come on. We've had 10, maybe it's 9. Different programs to eliminate the gap. The current one, which we're implementing, we're cutting $1.6 billion, and we still have $2.4 billion, and maybe more if Albany really balances their budget on our backs. We keep cutting and cutting, but we also keep adding services. And you can't have it both ways. Which service would you like us to cut out?
Well, see, I'm thinking of this in the larger state sense.
About the city.
I know you do. I know you do. But Bart, as you
have
said,
Andrew Cuomo in, and he's going to have a heck of a problem in doing this. And
all money is fungible. The money that the fire department gets because the aid from the state doesn't come down.
Revenues go to education. Spam me.
Yes.
They go into a big pot.
Exactly.
And you know, and every time they want to have another lottery, they say, "Well, give me more money for education." It's not more money. It's more money for the general
public. Did you cry over the death of OTB?
You
predicted it.
We did something about it. When they write the history of finance, one of the great transactions in history will be New York City pushing OTB into the state's lap. Because it isn't that OTB didn't have more revenue than expenses. It was that the state, by law, took 110 or 120% of the profits. So when people say, oh, New York could, it's the only place that you could run a gambling operation that loses money, that is one of the most ridiculous things. They just don't understand what they're talking about. OTB did make money, but they demanded 120% of it go to support the racing industry. And you don't have 120% of your profits. You can't keep taking that out.
Why wouldn't they have turned it around and taken 90?
You talk to the state. It's not the city's obligation. Thank you very much.
I understand. It's my obligation to take a break right here. 8:32. We'll be back with Mayor Bloomberg in just a minute. Joe? 22 minutes before 9 o'clock in the morning. Mayor Michael Bloomberg and John Gambling here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Mayor's going to be leaving a little bit early for an engagement around 9 o'clock. You had some fun this week with former Mayor of New York, Ed Koch. Now the Ed Koch Queensboro Bridge?
Well, the city council hopefully will pass the change to the city map, which is technically what has to happen to name a bridge. 175,000 people, motorists, come across this bridge every day. It was built in when?
I have no idea.
1909.
That old.
It was opened to traffic on March 30th, 1909, the year my mother was born.
I suggested that we call it the Eddie.
That's clever.
Is it, I mean, just because traffic reporters like JJ, then, you know.
They could very well at the Eddie.
That's, all backed up on the left lane of the Eddie.
Listen, Koch has done a lot for this city, and I'm sure, I think, I wouldn't ask him, but I assume he loved the Eddie.
Oh, I think he would love the Eddie, too. Yeah.
You know, he started the Department of Transportation's, or restarted its capital program after the city went through all the tough times in the 70s. He worked on replacing and repairing all these bridges. It was sort of falling apart until he got into office. So he really does have a connection with the bridges, and it's made a big difference.
And they want to name the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel after Hugh Carey.
Hugh Carey.
And I suggest we call it the Huey.
Well, that could very well.
Yeah, just a little short.
But they don't call the Hudson the Huddy.
No, they don't. Sheridan, they don't.
They don't call Sherry or no.
Well, the Joe DiMaggio Highway.
The GW is GW. Williamsburg, the Willie B.
The Willie B. What structure would be appropriate for the Michael Bloomberg?
Probably some, little newsstand kiosk or something.
Stop. Let's see here. Before you have to go.
We have a new sheriff.
There's a new sheriff
new
in town?
New sheriff in town. Everybody's made that joke. Edgar Dominich.
What do sheriffs do?
They do a lot of things, actually. Legally, if there's a revolt of the people, he has the right to raise an army and put it down. You read the things the sheriff has a right to do. But what he really does is he executes the orders of courts and that sort of thing, repossessions and things like that. This guy has an enormous amount of experience with the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Division of Washington, law enforcement for 25 years. I think his wife still works there.
Subpoenas, don't they?
Yeah, right. Subpoenas. And they're moving up to New York. When a judgment is awarded by the court and the defendant refuses to pay, the sheriff has the power to seize his real estate and personal property. A person with mental illness is ordered by the court to get treatment and refuses to comply. In comes the sheriff. Helps us crack down on illegal cigarette taxes. This is a tough guy and a nice guy. And the last sheriff...
How big a department?
Maybe 150, yeah. Something like that. The last sheriff, Lindsay Eason, was a sheriff for 8 years, and I knew him before that, and he was former PD. This guy's former ATF. So, you know, it's a job where you want to have somebody that knows something about law enforcement. If for no other reason, you know, they have to work with the police department and mutual respect of somebody else who's in law enforcement and was tough. That goes a long way as towards getting people to work together.
You mentioned just a little while ago pensions, and you kind of rolled your eyes and, you know, it's getting worse and worse and worse. We hear that same thing over and over again about pensions, whether that be city pensions, state pensions, right, whatever it might be. And it seems to me that nobody has ever really grabbing the bulls by the horn.
Well, let me tell you the size of the problem. When it came into office in 2002, our city pension costs were $1.3 billion annually. This year, it's over $7 billion, and next year it'll be $8.3 billion.
It grows exponentially.
Two reasons. One, the returns that they've been able to get in the stock market and other investments have not been great. As you know, the markets were bad, so they've got to make that up. Three reasons. The second reason is the actuary is saying, you guys have an assumption you're going to make 8% built into this thing. You can't make 8%. Bernie Madoff may have made 8%, but nobody else makes 8%. And so he's going to force us to lower it, which means we've got to put more money in because going forward, we can't make the assumption that we're going to have that kind of return. We're going to have the lower return. And the third thing is Albany passes pension bills, which the city pays. And in the state constitution, it says if Albany passes a pension bill and gives somebody a benefit, even they can't take it away.
Even if you get caught criminally.
If the city went bankrupt, the pensions would survive.
Everybody else would lose, but the people would...
Right. So that's the real world. Now, what do you do about it? Well, you got to get Albany to stop doing this craziness. The public's got to turn to Albany and say, you voted for this, and my tax bill's going up, and the reason it's going up is you voted for it. And that'll get them to stop doing that. You have to work a deal, which we keep trying to do. It's technically with Albany, but in fact it's with the unions, because Albany would never do it unless the union said yes, to not have as generous pension benefits for future hires. Not for the right. existing ones.
The only relief comes after the
which is
the,
true,
the roll
sure, but the trouble is, in tough periods, you're not hiring. And even if you were hiring, it takes a decade or more before it really kicks in. But if we don't do something now, you know, 10, 15 years from now, people look back and say, you know, why didn't Gambling and Bloomberg do something about it? They were talking about it on Friday morning and nothing happened.
Yeah, and also with an aging population and an economy that is weak, I'm assuming you have people that are working longer, so they are older.
That's, and you know, the pension system here for example, police and fire, you can retire after 20 years. It was something, I think John Lindsay started that. You know, so if you start out at age 20, in the police department and fire department, great jobs. In theory, you could retire when you're 40 years old, have your pension for the rest of your life, health benefits, pensions, whatever the law is. They have a right to this. This is what the Albany legislature, I mean, I've always felt strongly, if we promise something, we should deliver it. I don't think we should have promised it. But once we do, we should promise it. We should deliver. But we don't have the obligation to do it for future employees. And there are plenty of people who would take these jobs even if the benefits were lower. So it's what they would call a tier five or people down the road that haven't joined yet. And you got to say, you know, we just can't afford this anymore. There, it is outrageous that if they are criminals, they still get it. But that's the law. It is, and you can't. You'd have to change the state constitution, I think. It's outrageous that, you know, somebody gets a disability pension and then you see them doing the same job for another department elsewhere outside the city or running triathlons. I mean, you try to go after those, and they make great headlines, but that's not where the real money is. The real money is we have a pension system we can no longer afford, and we've got to do something about it. But in the meantime, you're going to have to pay $8.3 billion in pension costs, New York City obligation only.
All right, that's the obligation. What is the actual yearly approximately? How much of that or
that's what we're putting in.
Next, oh, I know that's what you're putting in, but how much are you paying out? I mean,
well, it builds in theory, you fund somebody while if you go to join the city and you work for 20 years, when you retire, we've got enough of a nest egg put aside so that the interest on that or the investment returns on that will pay you what we owe you for the rest of your life. So we're making an assumption about your life, although since people are living longer, those old assumptions aren't good anymore. We also are assuming that we're going to make a certain return, and the actuary is telling us you can't make that kind of return, so that's going to have to put in more for that as well.
And, of course, in some instances, these things aren't even funded, or the monies have been moved.
Well, they were all funded, but then what happened was the stock market went down, so they're less funded, not fully funded anymore. And if the actuary changes the assumption, we've got to put more in to make up for that, because then what the definition of fully funded would be different. Now, other states have stopped putting money into their pension
funds.
That's
what I mean, yeah.
We have funded our pension fund. That's the fiscally responsible thing to do. But, you know, I don't know. New Jersey, I don't know if they funded. I think they were talking about not doing it. There are lots of states
no,
just not funded.
Have. Yeah, no, I don't think New Jersey has. I'm not sure New York has. New York State hasn't. I don't think fully.
Worried
anyway.
About the city.
Yeah, well,
you know, so we were fully funded. We're not. But what we haven't funded is the health benefits for retirees. We have we estimate $70 billion is what it would take to fully fund that.
Immigration and ICE policy, something changing there where New York City police officers required to give identifications for those non-residents that commit a crime?
When you get arrested, we take your fingerprint and check documentation status. If you don't get arrested, if you need help from a police officer or you need medical help or whatever, we will not ask your documentation status. And the reason is it's in society's interest that you don't have somebody sick not going to the hospital, supposing they have a contagious disease or whatever. So we do want to treat them, and we don't want anything that would keep them from coming into the system. We want to make sure they send their kids to school. You don't want a bunch of kids in the streets that don't have education. We have a vested interest in all of that. Whether they should be here or not, it's a whole separate issue. It's the practical reality of what you do with people who are here. When there's a federal program where the federal government says you have to be a citizen or legally documented, then we ask. Because our obligation, we can't give you the program. When you get arrested, we ask. Those are our policies. They've been that policy for a while, and I've had an executive order out, and it seems to work pretty well.
Some have asked, though, that you loosen that.
You know, there's a fine balance between making sure that people get the services they need, because it's in everybody's interest that they do, even if you don't think they should get it. The rest of us think they should get it, just because it protects the rest of us. And you know, doing what's right.
All right, your transportation commissioner, I'm assuming at your behest, is increasing the number of bike lanes, and a lot of New Yorkers are concerned. Not so much about the bike lanes.
It's about the crazies.
It's about the crazies going in every single direction.
You know, I've worked, I've talked to Jeanette Setacon, our transportation commissioner, a lot. We're trying to do, kind of, sadly, some people just don't think the law applies to them.
Should the police be more vigilant?
Yeah, they should be, but the cops have a lot of things to do. You want them there writing tickets to bicyclists and not looking to stop terrorists or murderers or,
well,
you know,
no,
come
of course
on. Okay. You want to have a whole bunch more cops. That's going to, you have to pay the taxes for that. Just tell me which things you want and which things you don't want. I'll be happy to run that list by somebody else. The thought of the two lists matching is not very likely.
Well, you don't want to give me the list because the red pen would start going crazy.
The red pen goes crazy until you look and say, well, do we really not want to have that? You don't, you know.
Well, the answer is, of course not. We all want everything, but
right. Which ones do you want?
Well, but that's why they pay you the big dollar.
That's
the dollar a year.
But that's exactly what people say. You know, you wanted the job, so you figure it out. But it's that when you do these academic studies and you say, do you want to raise taxes or cut expenses? 90% say cut expenses. When you show them what the expenses you have to cut are, they come back to raising taxes. And if you think about it, 80% of the city's budget goes to five agencies that everybody agrees, oh, you can't touch that. Education, fire, police, corrections, sanitation. Don't touch any of those. Well, there's nothing left.
Well, there's Medicaid. I mean, there's
Medicaid. We can do that. We can cut Medicaid. Keep in mind, we pay 25 cents on the dollar for Medicaid. The state pays 25 cents. Federal government pays 50. If we don't have Medicaid, people show up at the hospital, and you have no choice. The law says you've got to handle them, and we're going to pay 100 cents on the dollar. That's a better deal? 100 cents rather than 25 cents? I don't think so. Now, I'm not suggesting there isn't some scandals and corruption and abuse. I'm not suggesting that we should do everything we do. But as soon as one congressman or senator or representative of the federal administration said, well, let's allocate resources. We're not going to give everybody every test. That was when some people started screaming death panels. I mean, you know, which things do you want to cut? You have somebody who's 97 years old, guy comes down with prostate cancer. Are we going to say to him, no treatment, because, you know, at your age, you're more likely to die of something else? Nobody's been willing to say that yet.
Well, they don't say that publicly, but
well, okay.
Doctors, I think, make those choices every day.
Well, they may, but
I don't know that definitively. Well, okay. But
when you're that 97-year-old guy, you may view this differently. Oh, well,
I don't know. I don't know that you do. But again, it's a horribly difficult question.
It's horribly difficult. And it requires somebody to stand up and say, this is what we're going to do, and get everybody on board, and everybody yells and screams, but they grudgingly go along. Nobody's ever going to want to do these kinds of cuts. We all know intellectually if we don't do it, we're in trouble. The state and the city, keep in mind, don't have much choice. They have to cut. New York City has to be balanced on an accrual basis, period. It's a law. And we even have to have $500 million in cash sitting there in case the accountants 6 months later go back and say, oh, you should have counted this differently. You can't say, we would have to be able to say, well, we had the cash back then, so we're still in compliance. Otherwise, chaos. The question of all sorts of things would kick in. But and the state, they have a little less standard because they can do on a cash basis. So if they get to the last month before the end of their fiscal year, they just don't have to send out any checks.
Right.
They don't have to pay any bills for 1 month.
Patterson did that.
Sure. They don't pay any bills for 1 month, and they say, you see, we're in balance. New York City, our standards, accrual basis, much different. Federal government, they can print money. The trouble with printing money is eventually, and there's all sorts of arguments as to when, but eventually it turns out that it creates enormous problems for our children. So intellectuals say, well, you know, we can't let Social Security run out of money. Okay. But the same people say that, say, well, but let's deport all of those undocumented. If you deported the 11 million undocumented, Social Security would go bankrupt 6 years earlier. Why? Because most of those 11 million people pay Social Security and don't get any benefits. You know, their employer withholds FICA. And there's no place to send a check if they have a benefit. So.
I understand. I'm not sure that you have ever convinced me that that's a good reason not to do it.
I'm not saying it is. I'm just pointing out there's no simple solution here.
None. No easy.
But it requires courage. It requires – and you know, we blame the president for a lot of stuff, and he is the leader. But at the federal level, it's Congress that writes the laws. And, you know, when they, for their own political advantage, demagogue and try to just block everything and say no, not good. Holiday season, I got to go, but holiday season, lots of opportunities to volunteer. Call 311.
All right, and we'll see you next week.
I'm looking
forward to
it. All right,
I know you've got an appointment. Thank you very much, as always, Mr. Mayor. We're coming right back, 6 before 9 o'clock. All right, it's interesting how I can talk in two places at once, isn't it? You know, the whole, and I've got 20 seconds here, unfortunately, but that whole conversation about cutting and decision-making, I understand it all intellectually. But what comes out of that is we're just going to be charging people forever and more for the same thing, and we're never going to address it. That's a terrible future. Have a lovely weekend.
You just heard John Gambling. New York's best news talk continues next with Glenn Beck on 710 WOR.